download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk, WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Joining us on the phone line, of course, it's a little intro music. Somebody I know who's a musical elected official, none other than former state senator Bob Hedlund, now mayor. Hedlund, how are you, mayor, today?
Good to be back, Kevin. How are you?
Now, could you guess that? I'm sure you could guess immediately the little intro music that we had for you.
I didn't pick up enough on it to actually provide an answer, but I don't want you to give me the answer. I want you to give me a small hint.
Oh, it's one of your favorite bands.
Well, it wasn't UFO.
No, but I'll give you the title of the song, and then you can tell me.
Oh, give me what does the title of the song begin with? I only want a small hint.
Power.
Okay, it was "Power and the Glory" by Saxon.
Yes, exactly.
Very good. Yeah, no, I couldn't pick up too clearly, but. Definitely recognize the first couple of riffs. The lyrics actually threw me off a little bit. But
okay, well.
Power and the Glory, actually a title track from the Power and the Glory album.
See, we know here at 95.9 WATD, you and your friend Cliff Stone, great musical guys who have a wealth of knowledge when it comes to music and stuff like that.
You know, Ed Baker of the Weymouth News, when we just started up another cable show in Weymouth, and when he wrote about the cable access show that we're doing, he referenced my background at WATD, and he let the cat out of the bag for, I think, only the second time published my Cliff Stone era.
Oh, yeah. Not many people know about Cliff Stone.
No, I got away with it for a long time, and it wasn't revealed, I think, until about 5 years later, my little stint under a pseudonym on WATD.
Hey, listen, if Peter Wolf can do it, you can do it.
Well, Peter Wolf lives his entire life with a pseudonym.
I understand that, but Peter Wolf has done a couple of stints here. He has signed the log and been a DJ on here. Now, I don't know if he did it as Peter Wolf or if he did it as, you know, he had a stage name or another name, but...
Well, no, I mean, Peter Wolf actually, you know, started at WBCN as one of the original DJs there. And right. He was married to Faye Dunaway, too. I mean, he's done a lot. And spun discs at WATD. I think a couple of the guys from Aerosmith have spun discs at WATD, not to mention a lot of famous folks, you know, who started out at WATD, whether news reporters, Aaron Katursky, ABC sure. News.
Absolutely.
The list is endless.
It's endless. So how are things, how are you settling in as the mayor of Weymouth? How are some of the things going? I mean, you just mentioned, I know one of the things that we saw in the news in regards to you putting together a cable show, Ask the Mayor, something like that, where folks can kind of send their questions. What are some of the things that you've been tackling in your first 100 days?
Well, it's been very hectic. We've, you know, the main thing has been trying to get staff in place. We've been working on that. We have we had to fill the planning department director's position. We had to fill the chief of staff's role. New town solicitor is actually someone from Scituate who started with me at the State House many years ago. And we're actually still trying to fill a CFO position. So, you know, trying to put a budget together during a transition with no CFO, things like that have made it a little bit hectic. And we tried to come out of the gate with a lot of activity. We had, in addition to, you know, some of the normal transition things that we had to undertake, I tried to adhere to some of the campaign promises I made. And we're working to hit the ground running this spring with a lot of different efforts to kind of improve on the aesthetics of the town, a little beautification effort. We're undertaking some work in Columbian Square. We've got a whole host of capital projects that we're rolling out, you know, that we got to jump on actually before we were sworn in during the transition. Some of the park improvements, and it's just been very, very, very busy across the board. Different contracts that have come up. We had you know, a lot of different union issues, just the gamut, you know, of what you've got to deal with in municipal government. Certainly a big change from serving as one member of a legislative body.
So I want to ask you, how has the personal transition been from being somebody who was used to, on a regular basis, on a daily basis, travel to Boston? What has it been like for you? Because I would think that it was different as far as the number of hours that you may have invested, while you probably put in, you know, maybe anywhere between 10 to 12 hours to 14 hours, depending on the situation, depending on if you had to go vote, to where it's probably a little bit different now as mayor. You probably feel like you're working 24 hours a day, seeing that you're right there in the community.
Well, I did get some time off last week, but so I'm not going to complain about the week I'm coming off. But the week prior, I think I had a 12-hour day followed by a 13-hour day, and the time demands are much more significant in this job. The workload at the State House is nothing compared to this. I mean, we have our little bursts at the State House, you know, during budget season, right, when things get very hectic. But overall, it's a completely different workload. I kind of made a joke during my farewell speech in the Senate, because I gave my farewell speech, Kevin, after, you know, I had actually already left and started in town hall.
Right.
And I pointed out that there are a number of members of the Senate that had municipal experience, which I never had before going into the Senate. And I joked that I did it backwards, because after spending some time in municipal government, it makes the Senate seem like a rest home. For a retirement home, the Senate president gave me a funny look on that one. But it's definitely different pace. Things move slow, you know, in the legislative branch by design. But here it's, you know, a daily, something, some crisis or two pops up almost on a daily basis, you know, and you're the chief executive that you've got to deal with it. So we had, you know, a few things along those lines. We had all the bomb threats that happened, and, you know, we had the issue with a firefighter making some posts that created some notoriety, unfortunately, for the town.
Sure.
But a lot of good things happening, too, so, you know, you got to take the bad with the good.
Speaking of fire and talking about the firefighter, I want to say there was actually one night you had like three fires in the span of a couple of hours where you had to kind of draw on mutual aid from other communities. I mean, what's that like as a mayor, knowing that you have major incidents like that happening almost simultaneously, and you got to kind of be on top of it to make sure that the general welfare is, you know, there's no fatalities, and that at least those who are fighting in public safety are safe too.
Yeah, and you know, we just had a significant debate in the town last year relative to an override and whether or not we had appropriate staffing levels, which our public safety staffing has been cut significantly over the last 20 years,
right,
and especially, you know, the fire department. We've had a closed fire station. So, you know, that brought that issue to light again, having just dealt with that last year. But, you know, no, even if we were at the staffing levels we were at 20 years ago, we didn't see the increase in calls that we've seen over the last 20 years. You know, we still would have had to rely significantly on assistance from the communities, mutual aid in that circumstance. In fact, you know, I was kind of surprised to learn when the second fire broke out, which was down towards the Hingham Line on Commercial Street in East Weymouth. I believe the first piece of equipment on scene there, believe it or not, was from Stoughton, if you can imagine that. So that was, yeah, that was a stressful day for our firefighters, but they performed well, and the assistance we got was very helpful, obviously, and the other towns who provided mutual aid performed very well, too. So, you know, the losses were somewhat limited there as to what it could have been, given the circumstances of weather and everything else.
Talking about the fiscal part of the municipality, when do you actually sit down and get involved with the budget process? Is that ongoing as we speak right now, or is that something that there are plans in place for you to start putting together your budget for fiscal 2017?
Yeah, we're in the process of that now, and we'll have something, you know, finalized in May, but it's shaping up that probably not as tough as things were the last couple of years, the last few years, but, you know, we've got the ability to get some capital stuff done that sorely needs to be done. We've got very dated buildings in Weymouth. You know, we get a little envious at times when you look at the revenue picture in Hingham, with its high property tax values, huge meals tax revenue, and Braintree with its commercial base that we don't enjoy. So it can be frustrating at times, and it's going to be tight on the operating side, but we are trying to get some capital stuff. We've had little bond cap capacity available to us and a little bit of free cash that will be able to get caught up on some capital improvements. But the operating side, again, remains tight. And that's going to be a real struggle again for everyone involved, which includes our schools, our Department of Public Works, and our public safety departments, police and fire.
Being a former legislator up on the Hill, is there any? Do you have any remaining gravity to be able to pull additional local aid, or at least be like, hey, listen, we've got, you know, I know that you have 350 other communities that you have to worry about giving them local aid, whether it's Chapter 70, Chapter 90, et cetera. Have you been able to get some kind of a push from whether it's, you know, the governor or, you know, the folks who are deciding what's going on with the House and the Senate budgets?
Yeah, great question. Not on the local aid numbers itself, obviously, because that's a formula that you're not going to see one community get a tweak over every other community in the Commonwealth. But one thing that I think that the town could have been doing a better job, and I talked about in the campaign, and I think I was correct now that I'm on the other side, is we haven't availed ourselves of different state programs, different state grants, maybe to the extent that we could have. One of the worst decisions I've had to make is we've got a library. We actually have four libraries in Weymouth, but we only have really a main library that gets most of the visitors and use and programming. And just to keep it open in the short term, in the next couple of years, I've got to make a decision whether or not it makes sense to put $2 million into the building just to keep the doors open. And the building is quite dated and has a lot of other problems. And, you know, I don't want to see good money poured after bad, chasing bad money. And, you know, we've never applied for a library construction grant in the town, so we're in the process of doing that right now. We, you know, hopefully have some good news next week on completing the East-West Parkway in Southfield, and that's state participation on that. And, you know, I had a direct conversation with the governor on a MassWorks grant for a huge, you know, project that we're working on in town that, you know, we think there's a role for the state that, you know, maybe in the past we haven't been as aggressive in reaching out. And trying to have the state as a partner in some of these programs that they do avail to communities. So, you know, we've stepped it up on that front, and we hope that we'll be successful.
One of the conversations during the election season was that compressor station, and I guess news has been released lately, is that there is going to be a bit of a fight. What's the latest on that natural gas compressor station? Is there going to be a push by your office, or at least by the town, the municipality, to fight this?
Well, we've been fighting it. The previous mayor has been fighting it. You know, we've got a couple, as you know, there's a number of gas pipeline projects in the Commonwealth. And we're kind of at the crossroads in Weymouth where Spectra Energy wants to build a gas compressor station to handle some additional gas pipeline capacity that will traverse Weymouth. And, you know, we are frustrated in the process because as a community that's impacted, we don't hold many cards in the process. We have, you know, this is in a very dense populated area, unlike every other one in New England that's been cited. And we're doing our best to convince the company to look at a couple of alternatives. I mean, there's even one alternative in Weymouth that may make better sense that we can't have the company actually considering, you know, put through the process. They're intent on this particular location in North Weymouth. So we're using everything in available to us to, you know, protect that neighborhood. In fact, we'll probably have some press coming to your station tomorrow. And we'll have, you know, just another front opened up in the battle, I guess, this week. But we are certainly overmatched. We've got, you know, a lobbying firm representing the company that includes Bill Weld and Steve Tocco, who, of course, you know, Charlie Baker worked for. We've got a whole host of lobbying groups that work for the company. And, you know, we're relying on our in-house town solicitor and one outside counsel in this effort. So It's frustrating, especially the process, so we'll see what happens.
We are, of course, speaking with Weymouth Mayor Bob Hedlund. He has been our guest for this particular segment, and we'll definitely look forward to news regarding the pipeline there in North and Weymouth, the compressor station, in regards to what action will be taken. Anything else in regards to the community and your settling in as mayor?
Well, you know, the thing that we have working for us long term is the development of Southfield. We announced the recreation component last week. It's a huge recreation component. You know, a couple ice sheets, 18 soccer fields, men's softball lighted, women's and girls softball. Just about every sport imaginable will be accommodated at this development. So that's exciting, and we believe we're on the cusp of some major tenants that will be announced over there on the commercial side. So that's something that's going to be long-term a boost to the town. So it's not all bad news. We got a lot of good news happening, and you know, I think people, as they drive around the town by summer, will see a lot of improvements in terms of the aesthetics of the town. We're replacing guardrails. We'll see Columbian Square improvements starting. We'll see an aggressive road and sidewalk program, a greater degree than we've seen probably in the last 20-something years. So we're trying to get the infrastructure back in place. That's something I campaigned on, and I think we're going to have some success in doing that.
Being the original host of Monday Night Talk, I got to tap one of your political veins. Actually, I'm going to tap two of them during this segment. The first one is in regards to your former seat that is up for grabs. We know that there's going to be an election. There'll be a primary in April, and then there'll be followed a general election in May. Next week here on Monday Night Talk, Christine James, of course, moderating, we are going to have four of those candidates coming in here, and of course we'll do the Democrats and the Republicans separately, talking about the issues. Give me your thoughts about this particular race and what you're watching from these individuals and what you'll be listening to.
Right. Well, looks like we have four candidates that have filed papers, and I know three out of the four. Democrat side, you have former selectman from Hull, Joan Schino, and current selectman in Hingham, Paul Gannon. Two people, obviously, that I've worked with during my time in the legislature, two good people I know that care about their towns. And then you have the president of the Weymouth Town Council, Pat O'Connor, who worked for me for 8 years as my legislative director, who I'm supporting. He did a great job for me at the State House. And actually, more significantly than that, I watched the job he did as a town councilor and council president. He led that town through a period on the Southfield legislation. That the amount of work he did and the leadership he displayed on that and the knowledge he displayed was incredible. And I think he'd make a good state senator. Mr. Gill, the other guy in the Republican primary, I actually don't think I know him. I'm not sure. I may have met him, but don't know much about him. So I think, you know, there's some, obviously it's tough to get people to focus on a special election, but there seems to be a lot of activity. You know, a contested primary mm-hmm. on both sides, I think, is good. When Mr. Gill got in the race, Pat O'Connor was a little distraught, because I know that the governor had endorsed him also. But, you know, I told Pat, I said, primaries helped me. Primaries are a good thing. They generate interest. They bring people into the process. They, you know, force the media to pay some attention to the race. So it'll make him a better candidate, putting him through a primary and preparing him for the general election. So it's good for democracy. The more candidates, the better, in my opinion.
The folks who have been tuned into Monday Night Talk tonight, we did have Mr. Gill on to kind of kick off the program. And we have had three of the four individuals on Monday Night Talk now, as of tonight. And I think we got one more that we'll try to get on. Of course, it'll have to be after we do the forum next week. But we try to do our best to get all the candidates on when they are running for a particular race. And again, knowing that you held that seat for many, many years, they want to kind of get your take on it. I was aware that you were supporting Mr. O'Connor, and I just wanted to get your take. Again, somebody who held that seat and who worked hard for the district, what are some of the things that you feel are the key questions that needs to be put to all of the candidates if they're going to represent this district?
You know, the big one for me, after having spent the time up there, is just, I hope the folks can make a judgment call on who is going to stick with the district, because time and time again, I just watched over the 20 years I was there, people campaigning one way, you know, in a district, and then going up there and just doing nothing but trying to please the speaker or please leadership, or, you know, please the Senate president, and throw conviction out the window and throw the will of the district out the window. And to me, that's the number one problem on Beacon Hill, is the centralized power in the two presiding officers. It's something I talked a lot about on these airwaves. So I would say, you know, try to focus on who's going to be the most independent person to represent us, because without that independence, they just kind of throw the will of the district out the window and vote in a way that doesn't reflect the district and simply reflects following the leadership line. I mean, if you look in the Patriot Ledger every Saturday, you know, you've got the roll call votes, and in most editions of the Mariner, you see the roll call votes, and it's, you know, across the board every week, you know, same voting pattern. You don't see anyone that steps out and provides an alternative voice.
And you need that. I think it's important in government to have somebody who has an alternative voice. If everybody is in lockstep, not much gets done.
Well, the thing is, you know, and then you can't even get a roll call vote in a lot of things that should have been reported to. So that's, to me, that's the big problem we have right now.
Well, I want to take talking about your former seat, and I want to go on a grander scale as we are watching things unfold for folks, for individuals, or an individual who is hoping to be the next president of the United States. Have you been watching what's going on, whether it's on the Democratic side? I think you would be more apt to be watching what's going on with your own party and the anomaly that's known as Donald Trump, and yet all the reports of infighting and that this is going to be a split convention. Give me your thoughts. I mean, you're one who has many times on these airwaves talked about what's happening on the federal level and what our leaders are doing down in D.C.
Well, my guy didn't fare too well. My guy's out of the race. I endorsed Rand Paul because of his foreign policy views. I think we're a little too interventionist and spread too thin and involving ourselves in wars we shouldn't be involving ourselves in. And that was my main motivator, and some economic issues, obviously. But I'm at the point now, I just almost am afraid. I mean, I'm a political junkie, but I can't watch the coverage anymore because I feel that it's just, I feel it's slanted. I don't understand, for instance, Mitt Romney's attack on Donald Trump. I think it's somewhat hypocritical. I don't want to see Hillary Clinton as next president of the United States. I can't stand just to watch evasive, non-committal answers to every question that's thrown at her. You know, with Ohio voting a week ago and watching her answer questions on trade and NAFTA and watching these, you know, untruthful answers about what her position's been in the past about NAFTA, for instance, and what her position's been on TPP and these bad, bad trade deals that hurt the American middle class, or eviscerating the American middle class.
Right.
And at least Bernie Sanders is speaking with conviction. So, you know, I'm pulling for him a little bit on the Democrat side, and, you know, I don't have much of a choice left on the Republican side. And the more I watch, I happen to agree with Trump on trade very strongly. Yeah. And I've watched some, you know, I've tried to get beyond the soundbite coverage from Fox and MSNBC and CNN, and watched some of his speeches more in depth. And, you know, they're not bad, but you see these little clips and the insults that the networks try to highlight. I wish he wouldn't do that, but, you know, whatever is working thus far, I guess. So, but the coverage is so slanted against this guy that it makes me want to support him, because it's just, it's pure propaganda coming out of most of the Fox hosts and most of the Fox shows, and certainly, you know, from MSNBC. And, you know, we're so polarized in this country, and it's just because of the red meat propaganda that the left puts out on MSNBC, the right puts out on Fox, that it's just poison out there right now, and it's horrible.
I got to ask you, though, is this talking about, you had mentioned in regards to, let's look on the Democratic side of things, between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, would you dare to utter the famous words that John Creed does on a regular basis when he's doing political coverage here? Would you say that it is over in regards to Bernie being able to catch up with Hillary?
Let me quote. You can quote John Creed, and I'll quote John Creed, but I'll also quote Elizabeth Warren. It's okay. Rigged. Yeah. You know, with the superdelegates, I mean, math isn't there for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And it's going to be fun to watch. You know, I got a family member that's strongly supporting Bernie Sanders. And, you know, they're very idealistic. They're younger. And they're going to get a dose of reality about a system that's rigged with her and the superdelegates.
Right.
And they're going to be greatly disappointed. And, you know, it's funny. You got the same thing going on the Republican side, but I think it's over there. And I think you're going to, you know, see the Republicans maybe try to rig something that prevent Trump from it. I just can't see how they do it. The irony is that they changed the rules. I won't get into the arcane rules, but
right.
One of the things they changed 4 years ago was, you know, for you to be actually placed in nomination, you had to win. Actually, I think it was either 6 or 8 states, and that was done to screw Ron Paul. So that nobody could put his name in nomination. Now, ironically, that's coming back to bite the establishment.
Right.
You know, so they're getting what they deserve. And to be honest with you, Trump will probably make a better president than who remains in this race on the Republican side. So, you know, I say let it play out. And I really don't, in answer to your question, I don't believe that they would be foolish enough to try to pull the rug out from someone who got the vast majority of votes in this process.
Right.
Even if he may be a little shy on delegates.
Okay, something we'll definitely have to watch. Well, that about does it, Mayor, here on Monday Night Talk. Would you like to do the honors to take us out to our break here at the bottom of the hour?
Oh, I'm a little rusty there, but that'd be great, yes. So, well, we've got to take a break, and we'll be back in a moment. We want to thank you for listening. This is Monday Night Talk with your guest, State Senator Bob Hedlund, and host Kevin Tauchi.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tauchi on 95.9 WATD.